Thanks to the organizer for the wonderful workshop. I'm going to talk about what I'm working on. It's about the higher spin honeycomb, key type honeycomb model and the possible Z2 spin liquid phases. So in the last decade, the key type honeycomb model has been has attracted a lot of attention, including some of us in the audience. So it is a very special model proposed by Kitaev in 2006. So the model has Hamiltonian with bound-dependent interaction. So on the honeycomb lattice, we have three types of bound pointing different directions. Here I denote them by different colors. So the this Hamiltonian means on the blue bound, there is only ZZ interaction, ZZ two spin interactions. And on the red bound, there's only XX interaction. And on the orange bound, there's only YY interaction. So this is like highly bound dependent nature of this interaction. And original, in principle, in general, this spin can be arbitrary spin S operator. But originally, Kitaev studied the spin half model and give an exact result. And he found some spin liquid phases for this spin half Kitaev model. But I'm going to focus on the higher spin version of it and also try to find some possible spin liquid phases. So besides the model can host some spin liquid phases, another motivation is that remarkably, there are some candidate materials have been proposed to have the similar feature that described by this model. That is the that is to say the candidate materials have the bound-dependent interaction. So far there has been proposed for the spin half system, spin three half system, and spin one system. So all of those materials has can be described by the Kitaev model. In the last slide. So I hope some interesting experimental observation can be found on these materials. But in this talk, I'm going to focus on the theoretical perspective of the Kitaev honeycomb model. One very important feature for this model is that it can have extensive local conserved quantities. This means so since we write the Hamiltonian as this, then this state means there are extensive number of local operators commute with this Hamiltonian. So the local operator in for general spin can be written as a product of exponential spin operators, particular spin operators around the hexagonal plaquette. So this is the local operator which commute with this Hamiltonian. So due to the existence of such operators, the spin half model is solvable, although the Hamiltonian is not a commuting terms. But for a higher spin model, the Hilbert space is larger. So the number of local conserved quantity is not enough for the model to be solvable. But I would expect that making use of those operators, I can still get part of the information of the higher spin Kitaev honeycomb model. So as we know, in the spin half model, such a local operator measures the Z2 gauge flux. So it has this clear physical meaning in the spin half model, then we can naturally ask if these operators can be interpreted in the same way in the higher spin model. That means if we can really understand it as also as some gauge flux in the higher spin model. So the short answer is yes. But before I go into the details, let me review a little bit about how we solve the spin half Kitaev model and how we understand the physics of its plaquette operators as flux. So the spin half Kitaev model, the physics of it becomes clear if we use the exact pattern construction of a spin half. As we know, one spin half can be represented by four Majorana fermions. So here I denote them as gamma zero, gamma x, y, z. So each spin half operator can be written as a product of two Majorana fermions, S mu, represented by gamma zero, gamma mu, mu equal to x, y, z. And we can check the commutation, the spin operator still satisfy the commutation relation if we plug in the commutation relation of these Majorana fermions. And due to some identities satisfied by the spin half operators, we can have local constraint among the four Majorana fermions. That is, the product of them is equal to one. And also, this pattern construction has the Z2 gauge redundancy, which means if we flip the sign of all the four Majorana fermions simultaneously, then the physical spin will not be changed. So this is the pattern construction for the spin half operator. Then if we by using this pattern construction, we can rewrite our Hamiltonian. Then on each bound, the two spin operator becomes the four Majorana operator. And there, among them, there's two Majorana fermion with the bound index, which can form a bound operator. This operator on any bound actually commute with the whole Hamiltonian. And it takes the Z2 value plus one minus one. So it can be viewed as a Z2 gauge field. So this means by using this pattern construction, we actually can write this Hamiltonian in a more in a very obvious way to understand it as a Z2 gauge theory, that the Z2 gauge field coupled with the matter field, which is the Majorana fermion. And meanwhile, the Plaquette operator of this spin half KTF model can be rewritten as a product of the Z2 gauge field. So this means it is a Z2 flux operator. The Plaquette operator is a Z2, measures the Z2 flux inside of it. So by doing this rewriting, we are able to understand the half-spin KTF model as a Z2 gauge theory with the matter field as a Majorana fermion. So the low energy physics of such model is determined by the behavior of the matter field, gamma zero. It has two possibilities. The gamma zero can be gapped. Since it's coupled to a Z2 gauge field, then the resulting phase is the gapped Z2 topological order. And the Majorana fermion can be gapless, form a Majorana cones. So the resulting phase is a gapless Z2 spin liquid. And those two different phases happen at different regions in the space of couplings. This is the famous phase diagram for spin half KTF honeycomb model. So in the anisotropic limit, where the interaction on one particular type of bond is much larger than the other, the system formed a gapped Z2 topological order. But in the isotropic limit, the system forms the gapless Z2 spin liquid. So we want to extend the study of spin half to higher spin KTF model. Along the same logic, basically we want to ask the following question. We want to answer the following questions. So for the higher spin KTF model, since we also have such local conserved quantities, are these quantities also some gauge flux? And if so, then can we see this from some kind of pattern construction? And if we can really find some Z2 gauge structure in such higher spin KTF model, then what are the possible phases we can find? So in order to answer such question, we would like to extend the pattern construction I just presented before to the higher spin operators. So here I represent an arbitrary spin S operator, S mu, in terms of 8S Majorana fermions. So besides the superscript 0, XYZ, each Majorana fermion acquire a subscript labeling its flavor from 1 to 2S. So in total, we have 8S Majorana fermions. And each higher spin operator is a product of two vectors of Majorana fermions, gamma zero and gamma mu. So each vector has 2S components. So by doing this, we can also check the commutation relation of the higher spin operator. So it satisfies the original commutation relation. For each flavor, so there are also some local constraints, like what happened for the spin half operator. So for each flavor, there are four Majorana fermions. They still satisfy the local constraint that the product of them equal to one. Besides this, we also require the local constraint is from the fact that the square of the spin length equal to s times s plus 1. So when s is equal to half, we must go back to the original pattern construction. Let's see. So when s equal to half, then we only have one flavor index. So the expression for the spin half operator reduced to the what we had before. And the local constraints are only this one. So the four Majorana fermions multiply together to get one. And the first local constraint becomes a trivial equality when s equal to half. But when s is larger than half, this one is non-trivial and can put some constraint on the Hilbert space. So this Parton construction looks a bit complicated because it involves a large number of Majorana fermions. But we can understand it in a very easy way if we understand it in two steps. So the first step is that I decompose arbitrary spin S operator to a 2S spin half operators. So this obviously enlarges my Hilbert space. So I need to put some local constraint to go back to the original Hilbert space. And the second step is to represent each spin half by four Majorana fermions. So every spin half is labeled by the flavor index from 1 to 2s. So therefore, for every spin half, the Majorana fermion acquire the flavor index. And the local constraint are just the same as we have before. So by combining these two steps, we got this pattern construction here for higher spin operators. So by using this pattern construction, we can immediately I forgot to mention. So this pattern construction has O2S gauge redundancy. So when S equal to half, so this reduced to O1 equal to Z2. So reduced to what we have at the beginning. So this means if we can rotate the vector of Majorana fermions by a O2S transformation, then the physical spin remains the same. Okay, so this is the pattern construction I want to give. And using those 8S Majorana fermions, I can immediately construct such an operator called, I call it giant pattern. So it is a product of 2S Majorana fermions with all of it, the possible flavor, but with fixed superscripts. So this means I got four type of giant pattons labeled by 0XYZ. And the prefactor ensures the giant pattern square to 1, to identity. So why I construct such an operator? This is because if I look at the local commuting operators, this W, As I mentioned before, it is a product of all the exponential spin operator around the hexagon. Then I can immediately write it as a product of this giant pattern around this hexagon. So notice there are two giant patterns appear on one bound with those bound index. And all of them multiply together to give us this operator, this plaquette operator. And on the bound, these two giant patterns can combine to a bound operator as before. So it commutes with the whole Hamiltonian. So any bound operator commutes with the whole Hamiltonian. And it also is also a Z2 valued object. And so we can view it as a Z2 gauge field. In this way, this plaquette operator is also a Z2 flux operator because it's a product of the Z2 gauge field around the plaquette. So in this way, we somehow find the Z2 gauge structure in the higher spin Kitaev model as well. But not enough. So I'm going to explain more. So by using the Z2 gauge field, we can multiply it on the bound to construct a string operator. So the string operator can have arbitrary length without cost any energy because the string operator commute with the Hamiltonian everywhere. But in order to have a gauge invariant string operator, we need some operator at the two endpoints of it to make a gauge invariant string operator. So these two endpoints actually should have the gamma zero operator. This means we can view this gamma zero as the Z2 gauge charge coupled to the Z2 gauge field. And using the microscopic higher spin operators, we can rewrite this this string operator as a physical operator on the string. So, yes, with the knowledge of the tensionless string with two charges on its end, we can have two possibilities for the charges. The charge can either condensed or deconfined. If they are condensed, then the whole string operator doesn't cause any energy. If we act it on the ground state, then it's still ground state. But if they are deconfined charges, then we're going to have the energy cost at its two ends. The ground state is modified if we act the string operator on the ground state. And if the string operator is a non-contractible loop, then if we act it on one ground state, it will certainly change to another ground state. So this means the behavior of charge is very important for us to understand what happened in the system. Then we need to study the charging more carefully. So let me rewrite this Z2 charge operator here again. So remember it is a product of all the gamma zero with all possible flavor index. And so here I rewrite it in a way with the help of the epsilon tensor. So obviously it's a SO2S singlet, meaning if we act the SO2S transformation on this Marjano pattern, the giant charge will not be changed. It's invariant. But it carries non-trivial Z2 charge. So if we act the improper Z2 transformation on this giant charge, it will pick up a sign. So it carries non-trivial Z2 gauge charge. And for a different system with different higher spin, the gamma zero can be very different. So if we are in a system with integer spins, so here, 2s then is an even number. This means there are even number of Majorana fermions taking product to be the giant charge. So the giant charge is a boson. But if we are in a system with half integer spin, then 2s is an odd number. The giant charge is a fermion. So this is very important because this means the system with integer spin and half integer spin can be very different depending on the low energy dynamics of the giant charge. Okay, let me analysis more on this. So remember the giant charge coupled to a tensionless string, and if it is a fermion, then it can only be deconfined fermionic excitations. But if they are bosons, they can be condensed, and the system can be trivial. So there are two possibilities if the giant charge is a boson. It can either condensed or deconfined. But for fermionic charge, there's only one possibility. So actually, so with those possibilities in mind, we can study this anisotropic limit of the higher spin Kitaev model, because there, the fate of the giant charge or giant parton is exactly determined. Let's study this limit. So this, the meaning of the anisotropic limit means that the interaction on a particular bond is much larger than the interaction on the other bond. So this means we actually break the honeycomb lattice into many Z bonds. On every Z bond, we have such a constraint due to the very large interaction. That is the SZ for the upper side times RSZ for the lower side equal to its maximum value S squared. So for every bond, we have such a relation. And for every bond, we have the solution SZ equal to plus or minus S. So this means we have extensive ground state degeneracy in this limit. So in terms of the giant Majorana fermion, this relation becomes to these two relations. So the first one means the four giant partons take product and goes equal to one. And the second means we can effectively view this two-site bond into a one-site, and it's described by four giant partons, gamma xy for the upper side and gamma xy for the lower side, and the product of them equal to one. So this the second equality gives us the picture of how we understand this bond as a single site. Okay, so then we can do the due to the small jx, jy terms, we can do the degenerate perturbation within the space of the extensive ground state. What we get in terms of the giant partons is consistent with what these authors get in the previous work. So in terms of the giant parton, we get the same thing that in the half integer spin model, we get a Wendt-Plaquette model, but written in terms of these giant partons. So here, the giant partons are fermions. So they are indeed Majorana fermions to give a Wendt-Plaquette model. So this is the effective Hamiltonian. It's the same as what we can get as the half-spin model, just to replace the giant Majorana fermion with the single Majorana fermion in the half-spin model. So we know the ground state of the wind plaquette is the Z2 topological order. By acting different patterns of Majorana, giant Majorana fermions, we are able to create excitations. If we act even number of giant Majorana fermion, we create like a bosonic E particle, M particle. By acting single giant Majorana fermion, we are able to create fermionic excitation, the epsilon particle, or some fusion of E and M particles. So these are very, sorry. Sorry, what, are you saying the spin half model or high? Oh, small gamma. Yeah, I haven't talked about like the fate of small gamma. So here, what I'm talking about is to understand everything in terms of the giant parton. But for single parton, it's likely there to be confined. Yeah, but yeah. Because so the group is O2S gauge group. So this giant gamma zero coupled to the Z2 group. So the rest of SO2S is very large continuous group. I expect it to be confined. But yeah, I don't exclude other possibilities. There may be some discrete subgroup which may be not confined. Yeah. Right, so I haven't, yeah, it's not shown in a concrete way. Yeah. Right. Yeah. SO2S. I think so, because all of the like the constraint there are constraint for all the A from 1 to 2S, right? The S, if we act on SO2S transformation on this little gamma, then it just rotates the flavor index. Oh, they are transforming the same way. So for the upper, for the superscripts, they are transformed in the same way. The SO2S only rotate the subscript. Yeah. Is this answering your question? Okay. Thanks. Sure. So you mean the giant gamma mu? Yes, exactly the same. Oh, you mean why it's a Z2 flux, not SO2S flux? Because the giant parton is invariant under the SO2S. It's only a charge of Z2. Right. So here I freeze all the degree of freedom of small gamma. Yeah, I only consider the giant gamma. Yeah. Okay. So let me continue. Yes. So this is what we can get for the half integer spin model. So it gives us a gapped Z2 topological order in the anisotropic limit. Then for the integer spin model, as we know, the giant parton is a boson. And the effective Hamiltonian we can find from the degenerate perturbation is actually trivial. So in terms of the giant parton, it's gamma x, gamma y, and on the same side, same effective side. So it can also be written as some effective Pauli matrix. And this effective Hamiltonian is obviously trivial. And the ground state is a trivial paramagnet. We can find that actually the four giant parton describe this Z bound equal to each other in this trivial paramagnet. So this means any string operator we can draw in the system is equal to one. It's a number. It's a trivial number. So this means the bosonic charge is actually already condensed in this trivial phase. So this by doing this degenerate perturbation, we exactly find how does the giant parton behave in the half integer spin system and integer spin system in the anisotropic limit. So meaning that those blue dots, we get the result for the blue dots. So for half integer spin, it is a Z2 topological order, but for integer spin, it's a trivial phase. So we ultimately still want to know what happened for the isotropic model, where all the interaction strengths on all the bound are comparably same. They have the same strengths. So for the half integer spin system, we still consider the fermionic charge. So if we start from the anisotropic limit, we want to go to this isotropic limit. We can tune the interaction strengths. By tuning it, I can expect the band structure of gamma zero is tuned. And a natural conjecture for this isotropic model is that the giant Majorana fermion forms a Majorana cone, and it couples to a Z2 gauge field as well. So this is the gapless Z2 spin liquid, just as what we have for the half spin model derived by Kitaev originally. So this is my conjecture. Of course, there can be other phases depending on the band structure of this gamma zero, like the state, basically depend on the state formed by the giant Majorana fermion. In the integer spin, it's even more unclear because the giant parton is a boson. It can either condense or gapped. So I can only say there is no critical spin liquid, but I cannot say anything beyond this. So there. With this result, those possibilities, the take-home message for this talk is that we study the we construct such a giant parton, and see this giant parton plays a very important role to determine the low energy behavior of the higher spin Kitaev model. And then for half integer spin model, the giant charge, giant Z2 charge, is always a deconfined fermionic excitation. But for integer spin model, the trivial phase is possible. Although we don't rule out any non-trivial phase, but yeah, the fermion boson nature of the giant parton determines the low energy phase of the higher spin Kitaev model. So With those study, there are of course many other open questions regarding the higher spin KTIF model. So one question is just what Chong asked, if the SO2S is confined or not. So without study the low energy dynamics of the system, it's still an open question. And another question is whether the bosonic charge really condensed in the isotropic limit. And one thing I'm curious about is that since there is a very obvious distinction between the integer and the half-integer KTIF model, then maybe there's some more fundamental reason for it. For example, some anomaly happened in such system, but I don't have any clear picture about it. So with those open questions, let me summarize. So in this work, I studied the higher spin KTIF model, and I do think the extensive local conserved quantity is very important for me to get part of information for those model. And those local operators are actually Z2 flux of the giant partons, so in my parton construction. And the giant parton is very different in half-integer spin model and integer spin model. So in the half-integer spin model, the giant parton is a Majorana fermion. It can be, it is always deconfined the fermionic excitation. But in the integer spin model, it is a boson. So it can condense and form a trivial phase. By studying the anisotropic limit, I can see the boson already condensed in that limit, and form a trivial phase. But it's still an open question, like what happened in the isotropic limit. This is all I want to say today. Thank you so much.
I like this microphone. So I have a comment about this.
Yes.
So in these papers that you referred, I'm both of these papers.
Yes.
So we use both tensor network wave function and the DMRG calculation to show that at least for spin one model, there is actually a phase transition from the isotropic spin liquid to the trivial state.
I see.
So in your triangular phase diagram,
yeah,
it's a small area where the gap to spin liquid is stable.
So is it a gap spin liquid?
Yeah, it's a very small gap.
I see.
Gap to spin liquid. Then when you make the coupling on isotropic,
yeah,
it's a phase transition to the trivial state.
I see.
Indeed, there is a transition.
I see.
From to spin liquid
isotropic
in the middle part of the phase diagram.
I see.
to the confined phase, the trivial phase for the spin one model.
I see.
Also, we have a separate paper.
Yeah.
With the Ingjia Cao.
Right. That one. Excitations.
By looking at the symmetries, in the gauge symmetries in the virtual bond dimension space, we can show that indeed the fractionalized particles are boson. It's a G2 spin liquid coupled to the boson.
I see.
So that's consistent with
construction. Yes.
So that's my comment.
Thanks.
My question is, I mean, it's all very nice, but I suppose we still don't know the dynamics of this giant parton, Kalmanov particle, because it's not an exact eigenstate, right?
Yeah.
So, but I'm just wondering, by setting up like equation of motion for this giant particle, whether we can actually infer some dynamics of it. So it's not going to be closed, because it's not, the equation of motion is not going to be closed, but maybe one can make some approximation, you truncate application motion or something so that we can actually study.
Yeah, that's
approximate dynamics.
Yeah.
With the Hamiltonian, it's not quadratic in gamma not in the end, so it's hard to solve, but maybe one can do like equation motion studies and like that. Very nice.
Classical.
Yeah, that's something that tensor net wave function couldn't do because we only have a ground state wave function. We don't have a wave function for the excited state. So.
Yeah, I can imagine the study of dynamics is very hard.
Right.
It's not very straightforward.
We couldn't do it, but maybe you can.
I do. Okay. Thank you.
Other question. Yeah, the rules are you can only speak when there is a box.
Yeah. So you've presented this based on the Majorana language, which seems natural due to the spin 1/2 Kirai. I was just wondering whether, as it is not exactly solvable for large S, whether other Parton representations, I do not know, Schwinger bosons, Schwinger fermion, what would you expect, or do we gain more information because we have the Z2 fluxes and so on, or do you have any hint by using other representation?
Oh, you mean like using the Schwinger boson or fermion to?
As it is not exactly solvable in Majorana, so it seems natural that you are using them because you contain the spin 1/2 model, which is exactly solvable, but.
Actually, for spin 1/2, you can also do the Schwinger boson or fermion, Schwinger fermion. That will give you the same result as the exact Parton construction.
Okay.
Yeah, but for higher spin, yeah, it always matters like how to do next. Like I can always do this Parton construction and like which ansatz you want to choose, and if it is a good ansatz, this will be the question.
Just make sure I didn't misunderstand anything. So just want to figure out which statement is exact, which is not. I understand the local flux is conserved, but when you talk about the open strings, when you talk about especially the bosonic versus fermionic statistics of the open string, normally for generic model, we say that's not universal because you can always find the flux and then you can toggle between the boson and fermion. So here seems you are not saying that. Is it because you are demanding the entire string operator to commute with the local flux? So the statistics of the endpoints are fixed.
I mean the self statistics of the endpoint.
Oh, when you say the endpoint is, let's say that the giant. When you say the endpoint is a giant Parton, which for integer s is boson and half integer s is fermion.
Yes.
I'm asking why is that statement universal? Because normally for a Z2 spin liquid, that's not a universal statement anyway. Does your entire string operator commute with all the local flux operators?
Yes. Yes. So all the string operator is constructed to be commuting with the Hamiltonian.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's probably why it's fixed. Yeah, you need it. It's all right.
No,
I don't have any.
Okay.
So maybe this is a bit of a naive question, but do you know what happens when like the spin goes to infinity? Is it solvable? Like it's just a load of classical, semi-classical system?
Yeah, there was one paper like study large spin limit. Like it basically studied the spin wave and the behavior inside the in the large spin limit. But I think here the even odd effect find in this way somehow.
So it wouldn't be defined.
Yeah. It's hard to continuously go to the large S limit. Classical? I don't remember. Well, what's the answer? Sorry?
In the largest, I mean, if S is infinity, if you're really in the classical limit, then you just have a massive degeneracy. So the question is, when you include the 1 over S corrections, then what happens, right? That's basically the question. So I think there was a paper by Natasha Perkins' group in University of Minnesota. They studied the effect of 1 over S correction. I don't remember the results. You select some subclass of manifold, I think. But that wouldn't address this even odd.
Right.
So the even odd effect doesn't show up only when the S is small. It's not like.
Well, it's a quantum mechanical effect. So.
Yeah.
It looks like the 1 over S correction would.
Yeah, as long. So if there's some fundamental reason to have such even order effect, then it will remain to higher spin, right? But if there's no, then yeah. Possible. Oh. Yeah, possible. Sorry. But I don't know, yeah.
Other questions?
This is very ignorant. Is there any relationship between this like Wen plaquette model and the like Wen Levin string net models? Or just
Wen plaquette model is one of the string net.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
They're very related.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't see any more questions. So let's thank the speaker one more time.